Hello and welcome to the Green Room at Furnitubes. I'm your host, Catherine Barrett, and we're here every month with a new episode. Join us for industry musings, interviews and discussions exploring all things landscape architecture, street furniture and urban design. As the sun is shining, I'm really delighted to be joined by Claire Hobart, Senior Associate Landscape Architect from Grant Associates in Bath, to discuss the impact of COVID on our cities. In May, Claire wrote an excellent article on the World Landscape Architect blog about green urban landscapes and what lies ahead in a post-COVID world. And in it, she writes passionately for the need for green spaces in towns and cities that can be accessed by all. So proper public spaces, not privately owned public spaces. Claire, thank you for joining us. Are you at home today?
I am, yes, working at home.
What have you enjoyed most about being at home?
For me, I think it's just allowed a little bit more balance with family life. I think that's probably one of the biggest pluses for me over the past 18 months as a mum. I miss the collaboration a little bit with colleagues in the office as well. So it's nice to find a balance, I think, hopefully.
Are you planning to go back sometime in the office and sometime at home?
I think that just remains to be seen. I think plans are still being looked at to find the best model.
Leads on to all the discussion that's been going on around what a post-COVID world looks like, especially in our industry of landscape architecture. How do you think the public's view of outdoor space has changed since COVID?
I think it's been interesting to just see, I think, why COVID has perhaps given us many bad things about the way the last 18 months have gone for many. But one of the positives, I think, is it's given us all a little bit of time just to pause and reflect and just consider our surroundings a little. And there's a few things that go with it. Obviously, the first lockdown was challenging, I think, for many people, but local open spaces with travel bans in place as well just meant that people found places or refound places on their doorsteps they perhaps didn't know were there. And I think generally outdoors has been the safe place to be, the place to meet people or to exercise. And I think it's just rekindled or completely awakened for some that they're just this sense of how important having those spaces available and accessible really is, just for human contact, but also our contact with our natural environment. That can be your local park, or it could be, you know, a pristine wilderness somewhere, depending where you live. But it's been quite refreshing as a landscape architect, certainly, to sort of see that happening around us.
It feels, as you say, as a landscape architect, for you to see what you've known, I'm sure, for years and years and years and felt really important. So do you feel that our priorities changed quite a bit in terms of what we want, A, from sort of life, and B, outdoor space?
I think that's true. I mean, sort of touched on whether you work at home or you work in an office or whatever, it has changed just where people physically are, and therefore they see things differently. Perhaps they're not doing that morning commute, you know, anymore, and they've got that little bit more time to go for a walk or whatever it is that just allows them to sort of see things differently. I mean, that's just on a particular, you know, very sort of small scale, but on a, you know, on a bigger scale, I think certainly for years now, I suppose there's been evidence built up around, you know, the health benefits of access to green and open spaces. And I think that is, it's just come to the forefront, I think, and it's sort of seen by a wider audience suddenly, as in the general population, see that same benefit. So hopefully, you know, one of the great lessons we can all learn from it is just to appreciate that more and see that it's not just about accessing nature, but it brings other new social connections and other possibilities that perhaps we didn't see from our environment previously. But there's definite benefits there. I hope that in some ways our priorities have genuinely shifted for good for the longer term. I think biodiversity and climate and emergency story, which was already breaking prior to COVID hitting us, but it's just as big an issue and just as longer term an issue potentially for us. So they come together, actually, I think, in terms of how we respond to it.
You're right. I think so. Climate change and, as you said, health, whether it's physical and mental health with nature and having access to really good green outdoor space, especially in an urban environment, and that connection between how much better people feel physically and mentally when they have been outside and when they're connected to nature. And, you know, really the impact that can have on some of our health institutions, such as the NHS, if we have more access to green space. So it's connecting those dots. So it's highlighted kind of how important it is and how it helps us as humans feel better. But it's also highlighted this kind of disparity or large disparity in access to really good quality green space in the urban environment, particularly, and with particular groups. So what is the inequality? And we hear talk about the green space gap. What is that?
I mean, I think it's just taking it a slight step back in terms of considering why we even consider it to be important. I guess all those sort of health benefits, et cetera, that we sort of, I guess, are beginning to recognise. It's also just taking a step to understand, well, in order to appreciate something, you kind of have to know it's there and to care about it. And if we want to sort of care for our environment, how do we foster that sense of belonging and ownership and for everybody, actually, and make it more of a democratic resource? You know, how do you ever really truly appreciate nature if you don't really have any personal proximity or have any sense of any connection to it? So there's a big question for us all there as to how we can better engage with it. If you can't easily access it, how do we better that situation? And there's been any number of reports about this and studies on it. You know, Friends of the Earth, Green Space Gap was one, which looks sort of slightly wider, I suppose, in terms of green space deprivation in England, certainly, and public health concerns that come with it. Within that, you know, there are communities in certain communities or postcode areas which really sort of stand out as really lacking in any access to green or open space. And that can be a physical lack of green or open space. There are also potentially barriers within a community, which mean that even though the space may not be there, it could be a physical barrier to getting to that green space. Or beyond that, there are cultural barriers too, or perceived barriers. And I think, you know, talking to people, you know, that sort of community engagement and sort of in planning any new spaces, just trying to understand what the issues are so that there can be solutions to it, are kind of key to that, really. It always feels like we've gone full circle in a way, you know, you're going back to the Industrial Revolution when people first moved to cities, and that sense of realizing that really the benefits and that bit of green open space is vital to people's health and well-being. We've lost it down the way a little bit in some places, and really need to sort of consider how we reimagine it, really, for the wider population. Yeah. More specifically, within London, there's been, just as an example, and I'm sure there are other studies out there too, but the Sustainable Development Commission has looked at just the quality of life, I suppose, and living for London's population, and how green spaces and a sort of a green network are really key to that. And beyond just access to green spaces, it's what those spaces do in terms of city environment and, you know, for recreation, but also for urban cooling or flood containment or even food growing. The opportunities are there. But what's been revealed by some of those studies is the massive gap, actually. You know, the amount of green space that is within a city, it can be massively inaccessible to large parts of that population. The facts and figures are there in their studies, but fundamentally flags that we need to do better.
So it's not just more green space, it's where it is, how accessible it is, and have we considered, it's not just putting it there, but how will it be used? How will the community be engaged? Does it provide what the community needs, whether it's access culturally, being able to get to it? Those all need to be considered, as well as the funding for it.
You've touched on the funding, but that's fundamental, really, for any local authority to start to sort of plan this in and set out those sort of targets and milestones that they're expecting any developer to try to meet. So if it's not there in the first place, it needs to be there to sort of bolster this. And I think there's a different way of doing it, and that can be sort of, you know, fully planned in as part of any sort of master plan development, and sort of part of, I guess that's part of what we often find ourselves doing, but it can be done on smaller scale and more community based as well, just looking locally at an environment and seeing opportunities for gaps in development or sort of meanwhile uses for places that can be the catalyst for something longer term, and to build a community and foster that sort of sense of ownership of a space, which can that actually be a far stronger and far more well-rooted way of growing places. So there's different routes to it, but it's certainly something that needs to be woven into, I think, now everything that we try to do.
You're in such a great position now. it comes with a big responsibility, but also it's great to be in the position to be able to push, I think, a lot of this requirement and this knowledge. Are local authorities and developers sort of thinking in the same way? Are they open to suggestions, or is it the community that's demanding this? It feels like a sort of a three-pronged piece. And how engaged are all the stakeholders?
I think it's growing. I mean, I think there's a public appetite for green space. You know, I think it's there and it's on the rise. And I think more and more communities will be looking to their local authorities one way or another, whether they're existing communities or people looking to literally buy into new sort of residential neighbourhoods or whatever. There's an appetite there to see that it's been considered. And I think more and more people, as more studies are sort of out there and people become more and more aware of it, they want that. You know, the sense of there needs to be a slightly more democratic approach to it. But often it's funding. That is where it comes from. That comes from sort of government policy as well. And there have been, you know, a lot more sort of moves in that direction, but we can always do better. And I think we just, as landscape architects, we are quite pivotal to it in a way. We sort of bringing together people and nature, thinking about this, it's not just about urban spaces, but also how we weave sort of nature and biodiversity into those in interesting ways. And they can be done in sometimes in relatively small interventions, but still have quite a big impact. Looking 3D, you know, from streets and rooftops and green walls and balconies, and considering people's private amenity, just places are developed as well, just to help make those links. It doesn't take much sometimes to introduce something quite special and give a breathing space in any urban setting. It is really a responsibility, but it's also massively empowering, I think, because there's this wave of public, knowledge and the sort of appetite, as I say, and that feels like the moment to really push forward with things that we've been trying to do for really many years now.
I completely agree. Is there anything or any interventions or any sort of specific things that you kind of have thought about for a number of years, but you can now see really gaining traction, and it's exciting to see what's going to happen in the next few years?
The way that we have worked always is trying to understand a place. I think when we first start to look at any new design, and part of that is understanding, I guess, some of the natural processes that are part of it and the people who will be using those spaces. And those two common threads, I think, always we try to weave in. And I think those two themes are just here and now almost, you know, there's an appetite to bring those two together. And I, without sort of going into specifics actually, but just weaving in all those layers and those sort of threads of thought that build from the ground up, whether that's to do with protection, trying to weave together strands and themes which build up layers in the landscape to do with water management, to do with sort of habitat creation, to do with providing places for people to meet. And there can be small interventions, like I say, or there could be large sort of neighbourhood parks and places for people to really sort of spill out and use in different ways. But across our, from Grant Associates, certainly across our suite of projects, it's certainly themes that we try to find ways in for all of it. And I think really at the moment trying to push forward with climate and biodiversity emergency responses and how that can really be sold with our clients and discussed with local authorities and developers to sort of see the benefits, because the benefits come not just from creating these spaces, but people that then use them, who want to live there, who want to sort of populate those spaces. It's a win-win really, but it's just trying to get the story across.
So it's win-win for the people living there, and then the impact that it has on the climate. As much as that's improved, then it improves the living environment for the people living there or accessing it. The role that landscape architects have, this kind of momentum that we're capturing with the public community and sort of local authority and government focus really on climate change and the environment. It's a great opportunity. Funding is obviously an important part, but how we look at what we do is actually very important, as well as with the response to COVID inequality, but for climate change. Do you feel, in terms of what, as a landscape architect, you know needs to be done, is that aligned with what, say, communities want and government policy is supporting? Is there an alignment with what everyone would like, or is there more work to be done?
I think there's always more work to be done. The climate and biodiversity emergencies, such a real and huge thing, actually. I think we all need to go about a little bit a step further, actually, to get to it's not even getting us to a position. It's just trying to find a new way of being, actually, I think, and continuing to push for it. I don't think there's an end almost. I think it's just a way to be. I certainly think all the things are there and the opportunity is there for us all to take. I think that the government policy, I think, is responding to it. I think the funding is starting to come. London, I think, has set quite a good example with a lot of their more recent policies. They often do sort of lead the way a little bit. And I think rolling that out sort of UK-wide is a great thing as well. Obviously, the issues are potentially different in different areas. So not to say capital-led scheme for the whole country, because that wouldn't be right. But certainly the intent, I think, that's there is great.
What's important is governments to see the results of what's being done. So seeing the impact on our health, which we have our own crisis with health kind of looming as well, and then can see positive impact on the environment and climate change to just gather more and more intensity in which we're focusing on both of those aspects. And as you say, London being open to trying lots of different methods and then seeing what will work in the rest of the country. And responding to it in its own way. Have you seen local authorities or developers who you kind of think have really embraced really looking at climate change and biodiversity and the impact on our communities through the outdoor environment, who have really embraced this well, that you look to and think they're really thinking about it, or they're getting it?
Yeah, I think there's certainly an awareness, and I think things are going in the right direction. I think to me, it has to come from the top down to really see change. It's sort of like a meeting in the middle, if you like. There's a grassroots desire and need and sort of awareness from local people, communities, etc., who want to see this for themselves. And there's sort of the government policy. And I think it almost comes from both sides, if you see what I mean. And, you know, I think local authorities are key, really, to making that happen. And as we are as consultants, as having that sort of, I guess, an interest and a specialism and a particular understanding of what we're trying to do with it. And I think many developers are becoming more enlightened, but I think that they obviously are also responding to their own commercial world. And I think the money, the funding, is a big part of being able to steer that ship, because it's fairly hard, I think, to just to point a finger at big, nasty developers, because they're often responding to the climate they're working in. And I think influencing that is key, actually. And that's how you start to see real change. I think for everybody, the difficulty is it's not instant. There's a time aspect. As we've known as landscape architects forever, that it isn't instant. It always takes time to see results, because we're working with the natural sort of growing world quite often. But it's really true. Some things are quick and instant. You see, wow, that made such a difference overnight almost, with people, whether it's people's attitude or a particular facility that's suddenly available for people. But often it does take time, and things evolve, and the needs will change over time as people start to use places in a different way and see different ways of being, in a way, within that world. It's a process always, I think, stepping forwards and trying to find our best way. And we're talking quite a lot about an urban setting, I think, in the way that our conversation today has been, but there's a wider discussion as well about how we use our land and issues around rewilding, which is probably another topic for another day. There's so much more that we could talk about there.
How we use our green space, or what our green space is in the UK or in the world. But if you look at the UK, not just the urban environment. And just going back to your comment on, I guess, commercial terms being important, certainly for developers, and funding playing a big part of that. I also think that as residents, as tenants, demand more, it becomes, from developers, people want to live somewhere that has great outdoor spaces that everyone can access, that builds a community, that has thought about the impact on the environment. Those will be criteria kind of that are important for developers to have answered for people wanting to be part of that development, as well as, I agree, the funding is a big, important part of that as well.
The benefits of sometimes small interventions that can grow into something else. I think that can be seen, whether that's local communities who want the same, as well as a neighbouring community, if they've got suddenly found a way to sort of engage better, or realising the benefits of something, or fire developers, as you say, that they have to respond to their clients, in effect, people who are perhaps buying houses or moving into premises and want a certain thing. So it's all positive, and I think it's a bit of a groundswell in that way, isn't it, that can be a really positive sort of push for change. I think we all need to keep that in mind. I think whether COVID has brought it to the fore, or the climate biodiversity emergency sort of in parallel has brought it to the fore in people's consciousness, but I just hope we can keep that same energy, I think, in trying to push forward to better things and make changes.
Completely agree. And really, it's great that there is so much more awareness on both the climate emergency as well as our sort of health emergency. The climate emergency being super strong, I think it's a wonderful opportunity, a really privileged position to be able to help bring everything together and use your knowledge and your experience and probably things that you've been wanting to do for years, bring them to the fore. So what can landscape architects or the industry, what can we do to help first sort of capture the momentum, but also keep it going and build on it? What can we do?
Yeah, there is an opportunity, I think, for landscape architects to do something that we haven't always been brilliant at, which is just a bit of self-promotion, really, and trying to get the story out there as much as possible. We span such a wide range of individuals and specialisms and depth of knowledge in terms of what landscape architecture really is, from land managers down to sort of high-end city sort of landscape designers and so on. And I think within that breadth of knowledge, I have to say that, if you like, the delivery industry that goes behind that, the landscape contractors and so on, that are all part of that same supply chain to an end result when we look to sort of create a new landscape. That depth of knowledge, that possibility in terms of bringing an expertise and a specialism to how we deal with designing new places, new spaces, is really fundamental. And I hope that we can sort of get that story out there now that there is this, I guess, wider sense of why that might be important. And we can sort of capitalize on a movement which seems to be there and push forward with what we know and what we've been trying to do for, I think, for a long time. But sometimes that's about lobbying the right people and getting the voice back up the chain towards government. Yeah. Sometimes that's about empowering people who perhaps wouldn't know quite how to go about it, but they know they have something that they want to say, and you know, talking to local communities and so on in doing that. So it goes both ways, and I think we are sort of in the middle of that and in quite a unique position to make a difference. I hope we can push forward on that basis.
I think it's a really exciting time to feel that the impact for you, it must be, and certainly for us, the impact that what you do, the how much of an impact it has, and that people are recognising that, how important our outdoor space is, and it isn't just this place that we use to get from A to B. It's actually a place to spend time in that really impacts from an individual's quality of life to the health of the entire planet. It's huge.
It's about making sure that people start to understand their choices a little bit in terms of how they go about allowing people to make good choices as well, in terms of how they might go about certain things, and whether that's moving between places and making sure there are sort of good, sustainable options for people to use to move, both for health benefits and the health of our planet.
Yes.
I.e. not necessarily driving, ways to move. And we're sticking out. But it's also just to say, I think it isn't a case of one size fits all or one model fits all, because the beauty of landscape is that every place is different, and the response to that place is really important as to how we start to plan it and how we think about how those places are then interconnect. It goes from the macro, you know, down to the micro scale every time. And I think that as we work, we are always sort of oscillating between the two, because there's always that connection in the bigger picture down to the very specific point about a particular place that you're trying to benefit. It's what we've always done, but I think that there's now the opportunity to really showcase that as much as possible.
It's really exciting, and I can tell that you've got some really cool projects that you're working on, and I can also see that it's great to have your work even more appreciated and hopefully more so in the future, and the impact that it has on everyone else.
Certainly lots going on. And I think based in the UK, we were at UK work, but we have done quite a bit of work overseas with the Singapore office that has been established for some time now as well. And one thing that we found with working overseas was just trying certain sorts of ground rules that I think we almost took for granted, that really amazing to see developing overseas, and obviously other thoughts from overseas that feed back the other way as well. So sort of, if you like, spreading the word, but also learning from our experience with it. It's been a really important part of our journey, I think, as an office.
Thanks so much, Claire, for joining us today to talk about the impact COVID has had on our cities. We've talked about how the public's view of outdoor space has changed since COVID and how our priorities have changed. And we've talked a bit about the green space gap. So inequality in access to green space, especially in the urban environment. Well, that was a really interesting discussion. What we can do to equalise access to green space, and in addition to the inequality of access to green space, also how COVID has really heightened our awareness of climate change and our biodiversity emergency, and what we can look at doing straight away, but also how we should be focusing on the medium term as well. Everyone, please join us next month as we interview Simon Pitkethly, CEO of Camden High Line, as we discuss this exciting new project that has engaged with the local community to provide access to new green space to over 20,000 local people. We talk about the project, the vision, and the competition to find the team to design the new High Line.